Hello, everyone. This is Peter Granich on January 1st, 2026. As always, this is not to be considered investment advice. You should always speak to a licensed financial advisor before making any investment decision and to read all my disclosures. Having just completed the single best year ever in my entire career and been around long enough to think it's far more like the exception, not the rule, I begin the first day of the rest of my natural business life. I remain part of an alternative to traditional financial planning team located in Wall, New Jersey, where I am still just life and health licensed. My business partner and I have worked together for over 25 years, with the bulk of our clientele residing outside of New Jersey. As always, we can only service U.S. residents. We offer retirement and estate planning, as well as stress-free, profitable business exiting solutions. We are not stock jocks and do not possess any secret strategy for making money with equities. We don't transform Chevys into Rolls Royces, but we optimize your Chevy to boost efficiency and effectiveness, helping clients achieve up to 40% or more in bottom line savings with less risk and stress than the current planning process allows. Okay, so we're clear on what I do and don't do. Please now allow me to share nearly 42 years worth of experience that was derived from several high and low points along the way. Due to the belief that America has already entered its worst ever economic, social, and political era, and it isn't even remotely close to bottoming, I believe the next couple years, at least, will be the most challenging ever for both individual investors and professionals alike. Before I go any further, I have two hardcore beliefs that if you don't concur with, I truly won't be of great service to you. The first is, I believe you can toss most financial advisors off the top of the Empire State Building, and all the way down, they'll all say the same thing. Hey, so far, so good. The financial service industry's main message to the public is simply, don't worry, be happy, regardless of their circumstances. Another scenario is the Archangel Gabriel could visit a Wall Street investment strategist's home, warn them of a pending market crash, and recommend telling clients to sell. They believe the Archangel and go down to their company telling them what they wish to convey to their clients, only to learn the company will never allow them to utter such words. Based on my own experience, I believe that true objectivity is unattainable in the financial service industries, which makes fair and balanced financial advice impossible. Let me give you just a moment to tell you a short version of what happened to me in 1987. In 1987, I was head of investment strategy. I made a forecast of a market crash. The firm wanted me to retract it or resign. I refused. The next day, they called me up to the main office and said this to me, Mr. Granich, 90% of all our clients will never listen to you to sell everything. And if you're wrong, which we think you're going to be, you'll be the laughing stock to them and they'll never ever listen to you again. And if you're right, and this devastation that you predict is coming, they're going to be in such bad shape they can't listen to you to take advantage of your next advice. Now let's look at the 10% that does listen to you. I'm willing to bet half of them won't listen to you to go back in when you tell them to go back in. Peter, we cannot make a living with only 5% of our clientele actually benefiting from this advice. You know what's interesting? They were absolutely right from a sales point. Not only did most people not listen, but the handful that did, less than half went back in when I said to go back in. So, assuming you're listening because you agree with these two critical factors, I will continue by adding another belief. There are only two types of financial advisors. Those who say what they think, and those who say what they think you want to hear, and it sells. The industry is full of the latter. I truly believe I am part of the former. So, on the basis you remain listening, not simply out of curiosity, but desire a most candid, well-researched, totally objective analysis, I'm going to provide that to you. But keep in mind, I have found that most investors who seek advice, whether directly one-on-one, at a conference, or via the media, don't come to learn, but just hope to get confirmation of what they already believe to be the case. Try your best to keep an open line, like it was so difficult for many clients who are listening, I know, who didn't follow in 2021 when I suggested selling all general equities and bonds to buy physical gold. What I believe is best now will surely have the same almost universal no-go attitude by those listening as it did back in late 2021. That's okay. I just hope I'm right like back then for my sake and those who do listen. I like to start with what I believe are hard facts and are crucial points to my assessment. Proverbs 22:7 says, "The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is the slave to the lender." The level of debt in the U.S., both federal, state, local, consumer, and corporate, is clearly unsustainable, yet little or nothing is being done to prevent the catastrophe that's literally now at our door. On the federal level, we're at $38 trillion plus with a T. Honestly, when I began back in the business in 1984, I truly didn't know what a trillion was. Nothing was at such a level, yet alone worthy of being concerned about. Boy, has that changed. The Congressional Budget Office now says we can see $54 trillion in debt in just 8 years, with some private economists saying $50 trillion is possible by as early as 2030. Just put a 5% average interest on that debt, and we have a $2.5 trillion yearly interest payment. The best we've ever done in tax revenue was about $5 trillion as a country. If this stays relatively the same, half of our total income would go just to pay the interest on the debt. Listen to me. Government as we know it and are used to will cease to exist. Also, many states are finding an increasing difficulty to manage their obligations. Unfunded pensions are a huge issue in several states but not discussed, including my own here in New Jersey. This debt crisis obviously falls on the back of Americans. Here, the ability to service it grows more troublesome. Two-thirds of all Americans are now working paycheck to paycheck and have no real room to add a larger tax burden. According to Bankrate, almost 60% of Americans can't even cover a $1,000 emergency expense. One in four have no savings at all. Perhaps that's why one in four are now using some sort of debit process to pay for necessities like food, gas, rent, etc. One of the biggest asinine actions by the Fed is the federal government is the forgiveness of student loans. Speaking on behalf of all good folks who either worked hard enough to afford paying for their kids' colleges and or borrowed but did the right thing and paid it back, why is anyone being forgiven? Did they somehow get charged usury rates? No. Did they get the education they borrowed the money for? No. Keep in mind this critical fact. Student loans are the single largest asset held by the federal government. Both principal and income will no longer be returned to the government on these forgiven programs. So guess what? Additional taxes will now be raised on guess who gets to pay for it? Correct. Those of us who did the right thing by originally paying off their student loans. Now we pay for being right twice. And where does it stop? Are mortgages next? Maybe car loans? In Romans 13:7-8, St. Paul tells Christians to pay what's owed to everyone, taxes, respect, honor, and to owe nothing to anyone except so as to love one another. In Psalms 37:21, Christians are urged to be responsible stewards, live within their means, and prioritize fulfilling financial obligations as a reflection of honoring God. A debt crisis exists not just here but throughout the world. I have paid special attention of late to Japan and how we're seeing a yen carry trade that has held up a house of cards there, here, and elsewhere become dangerously close now to falling apart. The ramifications will be enormous and can't be ignored no matter how much the Don't Worry, Be Happy crowd on Wall Street and the financial media tied to the hips tell you otherwise. When I started as a stockbroker back in March of 1984, my sales manager told me not to discuss three things if I want to be successful: politics, religion, and other men's wives. I've long ago disregarded two of them. I believe if you truly think long and hard on the following belief, you'll come to realize how much trouble America is really in. Outside of our Civil War, I don't believe this country has ever been more divided. We have seen a move to the hard left and the hard right, with the middle ground all but gone along with the middle class. The splintering is also occurring in both parties. I truly believe with the next financial crisis on the on-deck circle, when it does come to bat, the hatred of those across the aisle is so acute, the crisis will be far worse than any other before it because they'll be unable to come together in a meaningful and productive way. Because I'm neither a MAGNA member nor a sufferer from the Trump derangement syndrome, I get it from both sides because of my mixed views on what Trump has done and not done so far. His actions on the borders was absolutely needed and greatly successful, especially when one sees the damage already and still to come from previous administrations, allowing anyone and everyone in, no questions asked. I also believe his efforts to end conflicts was a net positive, and if he washes his hand with Ukraine, so much the better. But among his biggest errors also is on the world stage. By taking a big stick into a trade war versus an olive branch, he may have scored early brownie points with his fans, but it was a colossal economic mistake that is already coming back to bite him, no matter how much his lapdogs Navarro and Lubnik try to spin it. Remember 90 trade deals in 90 days? Well, that was a complete bust. China masterfully outplayed Trump, and many other countries have also played run the clock out with him. So for Trump, this is bad because the political chips he gained soon after his election have been played for the most part, and he didn't manage to bring the pot to his side of the table. Speaking of running out the clock, that's what Trump enemies are doing right now. Think about how his MAGNA folks were beating their chests after the election, wildly speaking of how many enemies he and they had would now see justice by going to jail or worse. One year later, every single one of them who would love to dance on his grave is still free to undermine him with apparently impunity. Some cases overseen by his attorney general were mishandled and dismissed. Perhaps she spent too much time on Fox News and not enough time overseeing things, or maybe something far worse. Either way, Trump's political chips are all but gone and his side has truly squat to show for it. This will greatly bleed into the economy and in turn the financial markets. MAGNA supporters are also becoming increasingly frustrated as lawlessness rises and many suspected criminals remain unpunished or mishandled, leading to a sense of injustice. They sooner see him focus on lawlessness than crypto, which more of them feel he and his family spent far much too time on and not enough what he was elected for. By the way, the strategic Bitcoin reserve has vanished, just like Elvis and Jimmy Hoffa, never to resurface or be seen again. The stock market has stayed aloft in part because of the perception Trump was good for it. He also had made it his mantra. It too will come back to bite him in 2026. Let me add right here one very important factor for the stock market. We have what is commonly known as a K economy. The wealthiest 10% of all Americans are estimated to own about 86% of all the assets. The next 40% own the remaining 14%, and the bottom 50%, zilch. The top 10% have gained the most from the largest financial bubble ever. The next 40% hope someday will be for them too. Half of the remaining 50% now use debit cards for essentially such things as food, gas, and rent. Unfortunately, the weight of their battle and the other 40% going nowhere as fast will be too much for the cream at the top. While they don't make their own meals, drive their own cars, or even fly commercial, they do still are going to be impacted by the 90% not doing well and will see even their great gains lessen. And while I'm at it, let me tell you the biggest single factor that has kept the greatest financial bubble alive, passive investing. When I started back in 1984, almost 90% of the daily trading was retail investors buying and selling stocks to be part owners of companies. Only 10% or so was institutional buyers, and of course there was no computer trading. Now, over half of all dollars in the stock market are in passive funds. I estimate two-thirds of the remaining amount is using some sort of algorithm computer trading. The smallest part now is folks buying and selling part ownerships of publicly held businesses. Here's the single biggest financial market concern of mine. Passive index funds now control 52% of all U.S. fund assets. BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street collectively manage $25 trillion. They have dominant stakes in virtually every significant public company in America. They analyze nothing. Every dollar flows into an S&P 500 ETF automatically, allocates 35 cents to 7 stocks. Not because someone studied the balance sheets, but simply this is their index. It's their index weight. The algorithm cannot read an earnings report. The algorithm cannot process overvaluation. The algorithm simply replicates. Passive buying increases prices. Higher prices increase index weights. Higher weights attract more passive buying. The feedback loop operates completely independent of whether any business is worth what the market claims. The marginal buyer of American equities is no longer an analyst with conviction. It is a target date fund receiving its biweekly paycheck allocation. This buyer has no opinion. This buyer may never sell. Price discovery, the mechanism that has allocated capital for two centuries, has been structurally disabled. I want to stress to you, you've got to get into your head how critical passive investing is. When I hear someone tell me they sit home now and trade stocks all day, I say to myself, another one that will bite the dust. They're up against professionals who have nuclear warheads, while they at best have a bow and arrow. And now they can't even play in the same sandbox with the big boys thanks to dark pools. Dark pools are private off-exchange trading venues for large volume trades, primarily used by institutional investors to buy or sell large blocks of securities anonymously without immediately impacting the public market price. And for those who hold on to the hope that the so-called professional advice will separate them from others, keep this in mind. The vast majority weren't even born or in diapers when I started. That doesn't automatically make me smarter, but many have never experienced a true bear market. They were trained on a one-way highway where you put the pedal to the metal and just go, go, go. If the odd bump in the road causes an accident, the Fed tow truck arrived, dumped all sorts of funny money on the road, and off they went again. This time around, the Fed rescue truck is out of commission. Oh, if actual performance means anything to you as well, 80% of all equity money managers and 85% of all bond managers underperform an index fund. Over the long term, the actual performance data consistently shows that most professional money managers fail to outperform their benchmark indices after accounting for fees. The S&P's Indices versus Active, known as the SPIVA, reports, which are the industry standard for this comparison, indicates that this underperformance tends to increase as time horizon lengthens. Bottom line, the lack of real experience in a two-way market will most definitely make the inevitable bear market much more pronounced to the downside. Multiple urgent challenges exist, including, but not limited to, a retirement crisis, an aging crisis, an infrastructure crisis. I provide some texts and videos related to this below. What I'd like to touch on now is a crisis I spoke of many months ago, was told it wasn't by many folks, but now the very things I spoke about are happening, sadly, not just around the world, but right here in the U.S. It was hard for some to see how this played into finances, but that has quickly disappeared as now it's hitting home, literally. I spoke about, and now, of course, it is being heard by most, about the Islamic War that no real politician anywhere dares even address, let alone call it for what it is, and it's become front and center. As bad as the other concerns of mine are, this is truly the deadliest, more ways than one. This is the only crisis I have addressed where I sincerely hope my assessment is incorrect. However, current developments indicate otherwise. Now, one of the ways that I talked about, which has just become now apparent in Minnesota, that I spoke about how billions of billions were being wasted in these fraudulent businesses. I didn't know it to the extent that it was in Minnesota, as we're seeing now, but this is just one of many examples. Now, let me also start to conclude here. After making and losing millions twice over four decades, I can just as easily speak about what not to do as what you may want to do. Those of us who portray an ability to look into a crystal ball truly only becomes experts on how to eat a lot of broken glass. But because I'm now well into my fifth decade in and around the financial arena, perhaps I can make some educated guesses. I will do so, but first remind you of one overriding factor I act upon for myself, and hopefully our client embraces it too. Less is more. After years of thinking that wealth would bring happiness, a belief shaped by Wall Street and Madison Avenue, I came to realize how much more meaningful it has been for me and my family to move beyond that mindset. you are led to believe that the bus driver can never be as happy as the owner of the bus company. Nothing could be further from the truth. 1 Timothy 6:10 is one of the best warnings, but often misread. Many will claim it says money is the root of all evil, when in fact it says the love of money is the root of all evil. The verse distinguishes between money, a tool, and the love of craving for it, which is the actual problem. This time last year, I was sky high on metals and mining, and they ended up the best performing assets over general equities and bonds. While I still favor them, I don't believe we'll come close to similar percentage gains by the end of 2026. I also chose last year emerging markets, and especially China over the U.S., which actually hit it out of the park as well. But this year, I'm not favoring any equity market. CDs need to be significant of most portfolios. Tax efficiency is crucial, as governments will increase seeking new ways to raise revenue from those contributing. I'm not saying or teaching tax evasion, but we are stressing tax efficiency, and we have several strategies for that. One last piece of advice before I leave you. I'm very concerned now about the status of private equity and private credit. A few months ago, when it was talked about Trump wanted to open the public to buy into it, I knew that the only reason it could be is that there must be some real problems with private equity and credit. And in the last several weeks, we're seeing it unfold before our eyes. I would be extremely cautious and try to avoid, unless I'm specific people who have the risk tolerance, to be involved in any way, shape, or form with private equity or credit now. Finally, let me remind you that my X page is going to continue to be my main source of communicating. I will still use my YouTube page and, of course, the blog. I know many people who are not clients had come to me because of metals and mining. While I will still speak to them, I will no longer be anywhere as active as I've been in years past, and I am focusing mostly on tying my faith in finance going forward. Please remember this, less is more. Err on the side of caution and be a live chicken versus a dead duck. Please have a most blessed and safe Happy New Year.